Welcome to yet another No Cash, No Code podcast, thick and fast territory. I'm the Commissioner, Andre Clark, and you're lucky. I am once again joined. I'm joined by Tom Maxwell, the historian himself. How are you, Tom?
Good morning and afternoon and evening, Andre. I'm very well, thank you. I'm dialing in from a very wet and windy Cornwall, where I am on an Easter break, but have managed to find enough time to keep our listener happy.
Happy Easter to you and to the listener. I am in it's nighttime here in Singapore. I am the least prepared I think I've ever been for a No Cash, No Code podcast because I have been tinkering like you wouldn't believe to try and work out what I'm going to do to get through this mid-game week. How are you feeling about your team?
So I've made my transfer and not hugely comfortable with them, if I'm honest. Chance that neither of them start, I would suggest, this evening. Or this game week, but I'm all at sea, Andre, to be honest. Fairly happy with my team, but the chip strategy seems to change on an hourly basis, and feel like I just need to stick to one and crack on.
I made my bed in my chip strategy a ton of weeks ago, and I'm just going to live with it. You hear the confidence? That's me chicken to myself. Right, let's crack on then. Let's talk about the week that was. Decent week, I thought.
Very fun. Very fun week. Do you want to run us through what games there were? Interested in how many of them you saw?
Saw is probably a bit strong. Followed is probably closer. I did stay up until 2 in the morning for the final game, but let's power through this. Listener, Tom, as he said, is on holiday right now, so the sound is a little, not quite to his usual standards, but hopefully this comes through okay. All right, now, wrapping through the games. Fun is the right word. We started off with one of the most fun ones overall. Newcastle 4, West Ham 3. Goals galore for all the people who are more focused on the game in front of them rather than looking at the fixtures ahead. Well done those who went early on the Isak transfer. That was obvious from those that are going to be on wildcards. Next, Bournemouth 2, Everton 1. Solanke on the scoreboard. Nothing else really of note. Then, Chelsea lose 2-2 to Burnley, or that's what it looked like from what I followed. How was that game for you?
It was painful, and Chelsea never looked in any form of control whatsoever. Cole Palmer doing Cole Palmer things, but other than that, it doesn't bode particularly well for what is a relatively easy run of fixtures that we have coming up. But if we can't beat Burnley at home, then we don't have much chance.
Really happy you ended up on Chelsea players. Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 1 in the most predictable scoreline of the week, in my opinion. Sheffield United 3, Fulham 3 in the least predictable scoreline, as far as I'm concerned. No one with the Sheffield United assets in that game. Spurs made hard work of Luton. No, I did not watch that game. I try not to watch them if I can do. Aston Villa 2, Wolves 0 in the first clean sheet of the entire game week and much needed. That was the last game or first game of the morning for me on a Sunday. And then Brentford lose 1-1 to Man United. That's what it looked like from the highlights anyway. Liverpool 2, Brighton 1 in a game where Liverpool came from behind and spared some blushes for certain captainers. And then the final game week of, I mean, was it a game? I'm happy with the result. It was a polished performance, a defensive masterclass, park the bus, whatever you want to call it. It was some intelligence from Arsenal, in my opinion. Were you lucky enough to watch that final game?
I was not. I got home for the last 5 minutes, had planned to be there earlier, but then someone drove into my car in the car park. So I had to deal with that, which meant that I missed everything but the last 5 minutes. And it doesn't sound like I missed much.
It was a bit of a car crash of a game. All right. So what does all that mean in terms of the points for the week?
It was a very good week for No Cash, No Code, I would say, Andre. Most teams in the 60s or high 50s, but there were five standout individuals in the 70s. So let's focus on them. Fourth and fifth this week are currently fifth and sixth in No Cash, No Code. Big weeks for them chasing the top four. They are Dylan and Nevin, two stalwarts of No Cash, No Code, who have a history of competing towards the top end of the league. 70 points for both of them, although Nevin did take a minus four. Dylan brought in Palmer for Gross, which would have been one of the best transfers of the week. Nevin brought in Salah for Bowen, captain Salah. That probably has stopped him getting manager of the week, to be honest, if he'd held on to the minus four, taken the Bowen points and captain Son, but still two very good weeks for them. Let's focus on the top three, though, and in rather fun style, they are currently 16th, 17th and 18th in No Cash, No Code, all of them with big jumps up in the league. Third highest, Andy Fisk, 73 points. Another fantastic week for Andy, who I'm sure we will talk more about shortly. Top two, both scored 75 points. Slightly different routes to get there. Brox, 75 points. Did not make a transfer. Captained Palmer. Had Son. Had Bowen. Had Muniz. Also had Bradley's 4 points as well. How he got bonus points, no one will know. Very, very good team with some nice differentials in there. The captain of Palmer particularly stands out to me. And then Kinder, 75 points for him, pulled the wild card, be taken into account here. Again, he had Palmer, captain Son, had Salah, had Isak, as you say, an obvious pick for a wild card. And superb 75 points for Kinder, exactly what you want when you are hitting the wild card. Only other thing I would just make note of, which is why Andy Fisk is not, now I've lost my thread. So that is really, I think, probably a manager of the week between Kinder and Will. I think I am probably tempted to give it to Will, given that he did not wild card and he had the best captain pick of the week. What do you think?
I'm going to assume you haven't had a chance to listen to the last podcast because I gave Will pick of the week for having less players and not using a free hit and managed to somehow be in and amongst the scorers. So it feels weird giving it to him 2 weeks in a row when he hasn't got the highest score. But I agree with you. I think it's a better team of the week overall. I think they're the better captain choice, not having to use a chip to do it. I respect it. I think he's on a bit of a tear right now, and I'm quite worried about young Brox when it comes to the cup. So I would agree with, I would vote for the cheat that is Will Brox.
Let's give it to Will Brox. We've been very rude about him on the pod all season. And I think given that both him and Kinder scored the same number of points, they're both first equal. We've got to make a pick between them. Kinder certainly gets the best wild card of the week, I think, very comfortably. But let's give Broxy the team of the week. Would you like me to talk about pick of the week?
Yes, please. Let's stay on the positives for now. There were some good transfers I saw this week. Who stood out most of all? And was it a transfer that won it?
Really nice transfers this week, but it was absolutely not a transfer that won it. And it's going to be a very quick one, frankly. Fairly cut and dry. The only other person I would mention just in dispatch is George Johnson, the only owner of Emi Martinez. As you pointed out, other than the Arsenal-Man City game, there was only one clean sheet all week, and that was Aston Villa. I was lucky enough to get 6 points from Alex Moreno, who absolutely stunk the joint out and was very lucky to be left on the pitch until the 63rd minute. You'll remember he'd been taken off before the 60th minute a couple of times this season. So I felt like I deserved that one. But Emi Martinez, 10 points in a season where goalkeeping points have been so hard to come by. Big shout out to George, who also is one of only two owners of Luis Diaz as well. So he gets lots of kudos for two very good picks there. But I'm afraid we absolutely cannot ignore the only owner of a 15 pointer.
Ooh, who's this?
Who I have just now second guessed myself on this because I thought I was looking for the owner of Ezra Konsa. So first thing to say is that he is on someone's bench, which is obviously hugely unfortunate. But
I'm seeing it right now.
one starter, and that is, go on, tell me.
Andy Fisk himself.
Andy Fisk, a man who I said we were going to talk about. Andy Fisk, the only owner, or starter, I should add, of Ezra Konsa. It has to be pointed out that Rob Leach, I'm afraid, had him on his beat bench. I imagine we may well touch on that when we come to Hurt of the Week. But Andy Fisk, another fabulous week for him. 73 points, has Ezra Konsa. He also is one of the few who have kept Bowen. He has Palmer, he had Soncap. He also had Ivan Toney, who, like a few of us, was probably left pretty disappointed, frankly, by Toney only getting one assist in that game. And I think it would be fair to say Andy would have been really heavily in the shout for Team of the Week had it not been that he had 19 points on his bench, leaving both of his Arsenal defenders there.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Like, his squad is looking really tasty. There was a time where I was chasing Andy down, and he's getting a lot of time on this pod for a reason. 73 points with a 19-point bench and some lovely differentials. One of the very few Bowens, the only Konsa that started, and the fact, as you said, the luxury of two Arsenal defenders. He was the first Ben White owner. I had him back in the day when Ben White was useless, obviously. And he's got Barkley the points on the bench as well. It's a spectacular week from Andy and could have been truly, truly brilliant. That's a little bit of bench points. There's also bench points there for Rob. It's going to take some doing, surely, to beat Konsa on the bench for the Hurt Award, but I believe you've looked into that one as well. So does anyone wrestle it off Rob?
Yeah, so I think Rob is the standout from a bench perspective. 20 points on the bench, including 15 from Konsa, in a week where everyone was pretty tightly packed in the middle of the sort of 50s and 60s. Rob, 55 points in total, had Pedro Porro, Gabriel and Bradley on his bench, starting. You can absolutely see why, if you're playing three at the back, you may have left Konsa on the bench, even with a relatively straightforward home game. But 20 points, that is absolutely going to hurt for a man who is rooted in the relegation zone. Let's just touch on a couple of other people and then I'll give you who I think is probably the winner of the Hurt of the Week award. So just down the bottom of the table, as I said, as in a week where most managed to make 50, even a few got up to 70. Elijah's 42 at the bottom the weekly table is pretty grim, and particularly pretty grim because he's got a team that you would expect to do better. He's obviously got his 6 points from White. He also had a 6-pointer from his Villa defender.
Yep.
His midfield of Salah, Bailey, Saka, Bernardo, all players that you're perfectly happy having in and around that team. He had a Sterling assist on his bench. Let's not talk about Raheem Sterling at the moment. It's too painful. And then up front, Semenyo, Haaland and Watkins, 5 points between the three of them. I don't think you won't get another week where Watkins and Haaland score 3 points between them. So 42 points when you've kept two clean sheets in a season where clean sheets are so hard to come by, I would suggest is particularly tough to take. My brother,
I'm going to slightly disagree. I think that's glass half empty. Here's the glass half full, because I had a little peek at the table. Can you imagine what his team would be like? Bearing in mind the Villa game and the Arsenal game were two of the last games of the week for those clean sheets. He must be just chuffed that he got those 12 at the dying seconds, really.
Very true.
Otherwise,
very
that
true.
Week was all-time bad. Sorry, anyway, I digress. So he's only 5 behind the world average. It's just that the rest of us have done very well.
So I don't think we need to over-index on that. I should point out that my brother, with 45 points, missed the deadline this week and ended up with only two playing defenders, of which one, Van Hek, scored 0. So despite having Bowen, despite having Palmer, he left the captaincy on Saka, which I think we can almost guarantee he would not have done had he woken up in time, frankly, to make his changes. Tom Everett, also down the bottom after a couple of really good weeks from Tombo, slips back into mediocrity, 49 points in total. How he's still got two Manchester United defenders, no one will ever know. And very, very hurty to have Watkins captain, who obviously came off at halftime, having missed two really good chances. That's a tough one. But I want to focus on one man for this Hurt of the Week award. Because we've talked about the best wild card of the week. What we haven't talked about is the worst wild card of the week. And he is the man currently chasing me, sitting in fourth place in Stephen Hill, who scored a perfectly acceptable 59 points. In fact, he scored five more points than our league leader, Damien, a much needed average week from Damien to give hope to Harry and myself and others in the title chase. And boy, do we have a proper title chase on, not dissimilar to our friends in the Premier League at the moment. But Stephen Hill pulled his wild card. And there are lots of wild cards played across fantasy football last week. He was coming off the back of a 20-point week with a minus eight hit. So clearly, you know, wasn't feeling great about life. But I'm afraid, Andre, simply picked the wrong week to do it, because in his team from last week, only two names need mentioned, but Bowen and Kudus, who between them scored 22 points this week. It was always going to be very, very tricky to make up anything on that basis. He also had two Arsenal defenders, and I suspect part of the reason to wildcard will have been to not end up with two Arsenal defenders against Manchester City. He also had Cole Palmer. He also had Son. So I've sort of tried to average this out based on who I think he might have started if he had just left his team entirely. And I reckon he would have ended up with 80 points, with the highest point score of the week, if he'd captained Son and not made any transfers and picked what I suspect would have been his best 11. Instead, he's got 59 and ended up with a wildcard team that includes Gusto, that includes Lascelles, both big injury worries looking forward. And so for me, that probably would constitute enough hurt for Hurst of the Week.
Wonderful. Wonderful analysis. I would like to think that for probably 80% of the league, they'd have realised that was bad if that was their own wild card, but not actually how bad it is. With Stephen, I suspect he's probably gone through it with the same minutiae detail you've just done, and he's not feeling good. That is awful. He did actually message as well, because he was one of those unfortunates that had gone with the Salah captain, had to watch after Son managed to pull it out at the last minute and wonder could Salah keep up on the second day. So he's been feeling pain from the very, very beginning of that week all the way through. So a very, very fair win of that award. We've not got long left. I do want to go for a cup roundup, but we'll do that after the break. A certain name has been mentioned early and often on this podcast. Shall we give him all of his flowers? What happened for manager of the month?
Well, it ended up being a bit of a procession. We've had some cracking manager of the month awards or chases over the past few weeks, and people coming up from behind to take last gasp winners, but no such luck this time around. Andy Fisk, 73 points, as discussed, has won Manager of the Month by 17 points. He went in with a very healthy lead already, 10 plus points, and he has held his nerve to take Manager of the Month from Jamie Cork, another great month for him. Dylan in third, another great month as well for Jeff Brown, who is hovering around the top 10 places. And also, I think I'm right in saying, Andre, I don't know whether he listens to this pod, and so I honestly don't know whether he's aware of this or not. Currently in ninth place, he still has his wild card, his bench boost, and his triple captain, which is certainly the only person in the top 10 who has all three of those. So whether or not he's actually planned to use them, or whether he, like, you know, picking Liverpool players, feels that that's some sort of cheat code, I don't know. But wanted to give him a shout out. But Andy Fisk deserves all the praise. He has had a hell of a month. Really consistent all the way through. He's had six green arrows in the last 8 weeks. He's gone from 2 million in the world to 800K in the world, which is his highest point of the season. He had an 86 point game week in game week 28, which was 19K in the world, which puts him, I think, in third place for best week of the year. So just exceptional from Andy.
It's fantastic stuff. I mean, that was a very difficult period of time to negotiate through. And he's obviously negotiated through it incredibly well, as you've just pointed out there. And this is all-time stuff for Andy. Because if you look at his career rankings, it's not good. It's not up there. It's not someone that you'd be expecting to do this on a regular basis. Last year was his best ever year with, 145,000 in the world, which is really, really good for him. So to see him where he is right now, fantastic scenes that you're moving up the rankings there overall. Cool. I guess, do we have time to go through the cup or where are we now?
Let's touch on the cup briefly.
Okay, I'm going to power through this one very quickly. So, straight after this, we'll go through what happened in the cup. Right, so for those of us that aren't bothering the top of the league, there was some other interesting action down at the bottom. It was the first round, the first ever qualification round for the No Cash, No Co Cup, and there's a touch of controversy. Listener, we did say this, that minus point on the week before would count. Let's go to the very first game. So the first draw out of the hat was Jeremy versus Ade. Jeremy scored 69, Ade scored 54. Jeremy took a minus eight, so he still gets through with the 61 points, led by an inspired Palmer as captain. Cold Palmer taking him through. Ade went from triple Spurs last week on his free hit. His free hit, to remind everyone, that didn't go particularly well. He went from triple Spurs to no Spurs. So like without the fact he's got no son, he's got none of the rest of the high scorers of the week overall, it was pretty one-sided affair, an easy win. Second game of the week was Ricky Singh versus Noel. Ricky, Palmer, Sun, Salah. Noel, in his first active game week since I don't know when, he's got pretty similar teams. He's gone with Madison instead of Sun, which is controversial. 69 points to Ricky, 60.2 points to Noel. But Ricky took a minus eight in the previous week.
Wow.
He took a minus eight on a week where he scored 15 points. He then pulled the wild card this week, which really makes you wonder why you took a minus eight when you're pulling the wild card the week after. So this is the gift that keeps on not giving for poor Ricky. Any thoughts on that?
Extremely painful, and may explain why Noel has woken up from his slumber. I saw he pulled the wild card, didn't he? So exciting to have bottom of the table, Noel. He's got 140 points to make up on Rob Leach, one above him. So let's see if he can finish the season strong. But a good cup run. Don't rule him out. He's still got his free hit, his triple captain chip. So played at the right time, we could see him competing.
We're saying there's a chance. All right. The next one was a very similar tale, unfortunately. I'm not going to even bother with the spoiler of this one. Phil Pemberton took a minus 12 the week beforehand. So he was going in basically like he was unarmed for this one. Phil versus Tom. The scores were close, 53 to 49. The 53 was Phil. The minus 12 meant that it didn't really matter. Tom gets away. Tom Everett gets away with a win, even with a Watkins captain. He did have Palmer. He did have Bowen. He did have a rare sighting of a McAllister in No Cash, No Code.
Nice to see.
Really only through. Nice to see 4 points. Looked better on paper than it did in the actual FPL scoring there. I mean, he matched a Bradley, for goodness sake, for how well he played in that game. So Tom Everett squeaks through. You can't be proud of yourself, Tom, but you're through all the same. Next matchup, Rob Brook, that's how it's pronounced, versus Colin. Rob Brook. It's been an up and down season. Let's just say that Rob Brook was broken by Salah's lack of finishing. He was one of the Salah captains over Sun. It was very much the opposite for Colin. Colin went in with a minus four this week, a minus four the previous week in a week where he scored 14 points. Yes, that's right. Colin got a minus four in a week when he had 14 points in total. That's minus eight. It was still enough. 58 points versus 50 in real money means that Colin goes through. We didn't mention this before on the Hurt, but Rob Brook had Chong. 9 points on his bench. How is that even possible? What's he doing in your team?
You're never actually going to start him, are you? So it's hardly even worth mentioning.
True. Now, this was the game of the week. This was the one that we all cared about. Hugo went against the world average, and I was trying to work out what do we do with minus points here? Because as we've heard so far, a couple of people knocked out because of what they did the previous week. So I went to look up what the average amount of hits were in the week before this, because so many were taken, but it didn't matter. Hugo won 51-47. The final game did make me feel I had to look into this analysis, but it went Hugo's way, so I didn't need to. They went into the last game with Hugo having a slender lead. Hugo had Douglas Luiz only. Sorry, the last day of games. Hugo had Douglas Luiz. The world average obviously would have had Watkins, with Watkins being well over 50% owned. Watkins gets 1 point, Douglas Luiz gets three, and so Hugo's safe and through 51-47. Then, I mean, we've mentioned him a few times here. You ask, could Noel catch Rob Leach? Do you remember Rob being on this podcast for being manager of the month? I mean, this seems like very long time ago. It's been really bad. Now, this game could have been controversial. We hadn't called out correctly all of the games on the previous pod, and we did not mention that it was Rob playing Nick Mick. So Nick initially thought he was playing Phil Pemberton with a -12 head start. Now, luckily, Nick is an active listener, and he alerted us that this was a problem first. So he was aware it wasn't any skullduggery or any fakery. He knew he was supposed to have Rob. Rob also pointed out that I'd emailed him directly that he's in this, and then not actually called out his name. So they knew they had each other. Rob had taken a -4. The scores were close, 55-60. But Rob can't catch a break. He's on the 55 with the -4. Nick Mick is on the 60. And so Rob's season is de facto over, apart from I wouldn't bet against Noel really getting 100 points on the way that it's going for him right now. So just to recap, who is still up for the cup and in the hat for the next round? We have a Jeremy. We have a Noel. We have a Tom Everett. We have a Colin. We have a Hugo. And we have a Nick Mick that have been saved the unfortunate situation of not making it through to the cup proper. That's it, I guess, for now. We'll do the draw. I'm not going to read out 30 names live. Don't worry, listener. We'll just send it by email this time round. Good luck for everyone in the cup.